This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There are no laws, as we know, restricting the use of tramadol. That has provided opportunity for criminal elements, even within government agencies, to get involved in illegal distribution.
That was Maurice Ogbonnia, a crime analyst and a former security official in the Nigerian National Assembly, on concerns that relaxing regulations to import COVID vaccines is creating space for drug smuggling. Details coming up. Also, because of Ebola concerns, passengers entering the United States from the DRC and Guinea will be required to furnish contact information. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Medical researchers and law enforcement agencies say the COVID-19 pandemic is creating space for the market for illicit medicines to boom in West Africa. They're particularly concerned about tramadol, the medication, a synthetic opioid with similar pain-relieving effects to morphine, is a controlled substance and subject to tight regulations in many countries. Studies show it's potentially highly addictive. But in certain parts of Africa, illegal use of genuine and falsified tramadol is common. Darren Taylor reports.
Interpol says in an effort to maintain the flow of equipment and medicines needed to fight COVID-19, African authorities have relaxed regulations and security measures that were mostly weak to begin with. This has opened the door for organized crime to traffic large quantities of illegal medicines, such as tramadol, especially in West Africa.
There are no laws, as we know, restricting the use of tramadol. That has provided opportunity for criminal elements, even within government agencies, to get involved in illegal distribution.
Maurice Ogbonnia is a crime analyst based in Lagos and a former security official in the Nigerian National Assembly. He explains that all imports into West Africa, including of tramadol, have dropped drastically because of COVID-19 restrictions, so demand for the drug has exploded. In Nigeria, a tramadol tablet usually sells on the black market for around 100 naira, less than 30 US cents. But because of shortages, its price has recently increased more than tenfold, and criminals are making massive profits by moving millions of tablets. In June last year, Nigerian authorities alone seized several shipments of illegal tramadol worth more than 300 million naira. Sources in the Nigerian security sector have told VOA most of the tramadol originates in India, where it's rebranded and smuggled into West Africa. Ogbonnia says Nigerian criminal groups are feeding demand for the medicine across large parts of Africa.
Those who use tramadol move all the way from Libya, including violent non-state actors like terror groups, into Nigeria to access tramadol. And a sizable quantity of it sells as much as 10 million naira.
He's investigated tramadol traffickers in West Africa for many years.
We also have another group of users that not only use tramadol for non-medical purposes, but also smuggle tramadol. And these are irregular migrants who move from Nigeria to Europe through Agadez in Niger Republic.
Agadez is Niger's fifth largest city in the middle of the Sahara. Ogbonnia says most illicit tramadol flowing into West Africa from Asia enters the port of Cotonou in Benin.
Because of the proximity between Cotonou and Lagos, Lagos remains the largest market, a very major market where tramadol that is imported is distributed legally and illegally.
According to the United Nations Refugee Agency, 3/4 of people who migrate illegally from Nigeria to Europe originate from Edo State. They pass through Kano State into Agadez in Niger, where they await passage to Europe.
So what they do in the process is that they convert their money into tramadol, because tramadol is easy to hide and they can get in large quantities. Secondly, border security officials are more likely to confiscate fiscal cash from irregular migrants than opioids such as tramadol.
Ogbonaya says tramadol is also popular among migrants who think it's an energy booster.
So it provides them the opportunity of being able to walk a long distance through the Sahara to be able to get into Agadez.
Ogbonaya says tramadol has been integral to organized crime in West Africa for 2 decades.
Those who help people to migrate irregularly also compel them to carry sizable quantity of tramadol and hand over to their contacts in Agadez, who will sell the tramadol and remit back to them in Nigeria based on the agreed percentage.
Much of Africa's COVID-19 vaccines are going to be made in India. With trade routes for illicit medicines between that country and much of the continent already well established, analysts are concerned that organized crime groups are going to replace their usual contraband with falsified and substandard vaccines. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The UN Refugee Agency is rushing to relocate thousands of Central African refugees in the Democratic Republic of Congo away from the dangerous border areas to safer sites further inside the country. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
An estimated 92,000 Central African refugees fled south into Congo late last year to escape election-related violence in their country. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Boris Cheshikov says they are living precariously in 40 remote places in the northwestern DRC.
Most Central African refugees are now living along riverbanks in hard-to-reach border areas, among host communities with extremely limited resources. Conditions are dire, with many refugees sleeping in makeshift shelters or out in the open. Most have little to no access to drinking water, sanitation, or food. Some have been welcomed by host families, sometimes up to 3 refugee families in a single home.
Cheshikov says the refugees must be relocated quickly because of the logistical difficulties of providing them with essential assistance where they are. He says it will become even harder to reach them during the coming rainy season when roads become impassable. Besides the need to provide food, shelter, and water, he says health needs are becoming increasingly urgent.
We have recently had a joint evaluation team among UN agencies, NGOs, and the local provincial health authorities, and we're very concerned that there might be a measles outbreak. There are already cases that have been registered. Only 30% of the refugee children have been vaccinated. We're calling for a vaccination drive.
Cheshikov says the UNHCR and the DRC's National Refugee Commission have started to develop a site for 10,000 refugees in Modal Village in North Ubangi province, and a second site is being considered in Basuele province. Additionally, he says 4 relocation sites will be prepared for some 35,000 refugees to live alongside local communities. These refugees, he says, will be able to grow their own crops and live a more independent life. Providing protection and humanitarian assistance for thousands of displaced Central Africans is costly. As the needs of the refugees increase, the UNHCR says so do the funding requirements. The agency is urging the international community to respond generously to its recent appeal for $164.7 million so it can deliver life-saving support to these vulnerable people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigerian security officials say jihadists linked to the Islamic State group attacked the northeastern town of Dikwa yesterday, burning down the police station and attacking the primary health center and the humanitarian office. The Nigerian military has confirmed that the attackers are with the Boko Haram offshoot, the Islamic State of West Africa Province, or ISWAP. UN spokesman Stephanie Dujarric said the humanitarian office that was attacked was being managed by the International Organization for Migration. According to the Associated Press, the latest attack in Dikwa, home to almost 100,000 people, underscores the worsening security situation in northern Nigeria, where security forces face growing challenges. Two aid workers in Dikwa requesting anonymity said Islamic State fighters left the town of their own accord after the attack yesterday without meeting any Nigerian military resistance. The U.S. and Africa are separated by an ocean, but ties between the continent and U.S. cities run deep. That's the idea behind a new interactive report called Africa Matters to U.S. Cities. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with its main author, Judd Devermont, director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C.
You know, when people in Washington, D.C. talk about why Africa matters to the United States, what they really mean is why Africa matters to national security interests. Terrorism, piracy, infectious diseases, humanitarian crises. And our view is that this doesn't resonate with most Americans.
You cite a survey conducted by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs that indicates that at the beginning of 2020, only 1% of Americans felt that Africa is the most important region.
And so we decided that we needed to take a different cut of this issue and understanding at the city level how Africa and African diaspora enrich the lives of Americans in ways that they could touch and feel. So we ended up looking at 15 different cities all across America. And in every single one of them, you learn that the African diaspora plays a big part in the cultural lives of a city. And the trade between these cities and the continent can be substantial.
What are some specific examples of how trade with Africa or through Africans have benefited American city dwellers?
If you're based in Atlanta, you know that Coca-Cola has a huge Africa portfolio and that it brings money and revenue and jobs to Atlanta. If you're in Salt Lake City, you know that many Mormons do missions on the continent and have great experiences, and students come to study at Brigham Young. It's about those personal connections that people make. You live in Seattle and you work for the Gates Foundation. You understand how important the philanthropic arm of the city is and how that enriches the city. And African students in 2019 brought $1.7 billion to American economy. And Africans are at the forefront of academic excellence. Brown University hosted Chinua Achebe, the famed Nigerian author, to teach Americans about literature. And in Denver, we feature Nketa Ricks, the first Liberian-American member of the state assembly, and all the work that she is doing for her community. In each of these examples, you can show how Africans are coming to America and enriching our cultural lives and expanding our economies.
Of course, African immigrants of all kinds have often been a boon to America's cities.
Africans are some of the most educated immigrants in America. Whether you are in a red or a blue state, most cities have a proud tradition of welcoming immigrants and welcoming refugees.
That runs a bit contrary to former President Trump's policy, which made work and student visas quite difficult to obtain.
And it was a mean-spirited policy, particularly when it came to blocking African immigrants. But thankfully, we have members of Congress who are committed to this relationship, and we have phenomenal diplomats in embassies who are doing the good work. And now I think all of that's going to come together under President Biden, who within the first 2 weeks of his administration sent a video message to the African unions that has reversed the travel ban and has already talked to President Ramaphosa of South Africa, President Kenyatta. So we've seen a dramatic turnaround.
And just to bring the conversation full circle to the beginning, when we were talking about traditional security concerns, there are some great partnerships between some American states and African nations. Want to say something about those?
In Alabama and in New Mexico, those National Guards have deployed to Djibouti. And then the National Guard in North Carolina has a state partnership program with Botswana. In Albuquerque, Sandia National Laboratory has done partnerships with African governments to teach them and to learn from them about how do you address infectious diseases. So there's a lot of work in all sectors that I think are tributes to the relationship and the potential there.
That was Judd Devermont, director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. The report is at www.csis.org and type African Matters in the search bar. Zimbabwe is easing the latest COVID-19 lockdown, which saw most citizens staying indoors since the beginning of the year. Reporter Kusazi Nwashi has the details.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa announced the revised measures yesterday.
The wearing of face masks, temperature checks, as well as washing of hands or use of sanitizers in all public areas remains mandatory. The curfew is adjusted and will now be from 10 p.m. to 5:30 in the morning. Letters are no longer required for movement. Supermarkets can now remain open up to 7 p.m. to reduce congestion and must enforce social distancing within their premises. Industry to open with strict adherence to World Health Organization set standards and the national COVID-19 guidelines. As such, the regular disinfection of premises, social distancing, and sanitization, and the use of body temperature checks at entrances will continue.
The Presidium pronounced that the small to medium enterprises and the informal sector can reopen on similar conditions. Dr. Norman Matara, with the Zimbabwe Doctors for Human Rights, welcomes the easing of the lockdown.
We believe the decision taken by government to ease the lockdown yesterday was the right decision. Lockdowns are not meant to last forever, and with the cases of COVID-19 significantly going down within the past month, we think that the best way forward was to open up the economy with the easing of the lockdown. Because during the lockdown, there were no social safety nets for the vulnerable, for small and medium enterprise business, and these were suffering a lot due to the lockdown.
The hardships brought by the lockdown has been evident on vulnerable individuals and small businesses. The new measures have been widely welcomed by the informal sector, which is eager to resume operations and make up for lost time. Mnangagwa said people should not relax.
We must, however, remain alert and on guard to maintain this positive momentum attained so far. Government has rolled out of the first phase of the national COVID-19 vaccination program, which targets the frontline workers, security sector, and the members of the media, the elderly, and those with underlying conditions.
Zimbabwe is expecting more vaccines to continue to arrive. Zimbabwe is expecting more vaccines to continue to arrive. Despite mixed feelings, many are pinning hope on returning to normalcy behind the vaccine rollout. Schools have been told to be ready to open while intercity has resumed under strict measures. Bars, nightclubs, gyms remain closed while bottle stores are under strict instructions to ensure customers take away their beverages. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, now requires airlines to collect contact information on travelers coming to the United States from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Guinea. The requirement, which addresses Ebola concerns, takes effect tomorrow. Travelers who have been to the DRC or Guinea within the past 21 days must fly to only one of six U.S. airports, New York's JFK, Chicago, Atlanta, Washington Dulles, Newark, or Los Angeles. The numbers of passengers arriving from the DRC and Guinea lately, according to U.S. officials, is less than 100 people a day. Since DRC authorities declared a resurgence of Ebola last month, three new cases have been confirmed in the eastern DRC, bringing the number of infected people to 11. Four people have died and two have recovered among the 11 cases. South Sudan's Civil Aviation Authority says it has dispatched a team to the site of a plane crash in Jonglei State last night that officials say killed 10 people, including two crew members. Kur Kual, director of the South Sudan Aviation Authority, says engine failure might have been the cause of the crash by the plane owned by the South Supreme Airline. Ayi Duang Ayi, director of the South Supreme Airline, says the plane was in good condition before the crash. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihenius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the International